Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now! A manhunt is underway in Utah after the prominent far-right activist Charlie Kirk was assassinated Wednesday as he spoke before a crowd of thousands at Utah Valley University. While a suspect is not in custody, President Trump is already blaming the left for Kirk's murder.
For years, those on the radical left have compared wonderful Americans like Charlie to Nazis and the world's worst mass murderers and criminals. This kind of rhetoric is directly responsible for the terrorism that we're seeing in our country today.
We'll look at the killing of Charlie Kirk and rising political violence with Jeff Charlotte, author of The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War. Then to Radley Balko on how President Trump is taking steps to build his own personal army by creating a standing military force to be deployed domestically. And we go to Tunisia for an update on the Gaza-bound aid flotilla that's been attacked twice by suspected drones in recent days.
There is no other government that is interested to stop such a civilian movement except the government of Israel. So this what they happened. It's a violation of Tunisian law, violation of civilians, attack on a ship that carry humanitarian aid with civilians on board.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A manhunt is underway for the shooter who killed the conservative activist Charlie Kirk at Utah Valley University on Wednesday. Kirk founded the conservative youth organization Turning Point USA when he was just 18 years old and played a crucial role in President Trump's 2024 victory. Kirk was speaking outside, taking questions from the crowd when he was killed by a single shot fired from a nearby rooftop on campus. Utah Governor Spencer Cox said, quote, "I want to be very clear that this is a political assassination," unquote. Here's Scott Robbins, who witnessed the shooting.
Absolutely horrible event. You know, Charlie Kirk, he goes up there. He even has security to protect him from other extremists that have attacked him before, from just debating them civilly. And so people didn't expect that kind of thing to happen.
President Trump blamed the, quote, radical left for Kirk's death before a suspect has been identified and even tied the shooting to his own assassination attempt.
Back on my life in Butler, Pennsylvania last year, which killed a husband and father to the attacks on ICE agents, to the vicious murder of a healthcare executive in the streets of New York, to the shooting of House Majority Leader Steve Scalise and three others. Radical left political violence has hurt too many innocent people and taken too many lives.
President Trump neglected to mention attacks on Democrats, including the former Democratic Speaker of the Minnesota House, Melissa Hortman, and her husband, who were assassinated in June. Kirk was shot in the midst of talking about mass shootings. He was asked by an audience member about the number of transgender mass shooters in the country compared to the overall number of mass shooters when a bullet hit him in the neck. In the past, Charlie Kirk repeatedly praised the Second Amendment and downplayed the seriousness of gun violence. Here's what he said back in April of 2023.
You will never live in a society when you have an armed citizenry and you won't have a single gun death. That is nonsense. It's drivel. Wow. But I think it's worth it. I think it's worth to have a cost of, unfortunately, some gun deaths every single year so that we can have the Second Amendment to protect our other God-given rights.
Charlie Kirk's murder comes after the former FBI special agent in charge of Salt Lake City, Mehtab Syed, was forced out last month after just 6 months on the job. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. In Colorado, a student opened fire at a high school, injuring two of his classmates. The gunman died of self-inflicted injuries. Authorities are currently investigating a motive for the attack. On social media, Colorado Governor Jared Polis posted, quote, "We are all praying for the victims and the entire community," he said. Israeli airstrikes hit Yemen Wednesday, killing 35 people and injuring 131. The strikes on the capital Sana'a and the northern province of Al-Jawf come a day after Israel's strike on Qatar, targeting senior Hamas leadership. Yemen's health ministry said Israel attacked civilian and residential areas in Sana'a, as well as a government compound in Al-Jawf province. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the strikes were in response to a Houthi drone attack that struck an airport in southern Israel earlier this week. Qatar's Prime Minister Mohammed bin Abdulrahman bin Jassim Al-Thani said Wednesday the Israeli strike on Qatar killed any hope for the hostages in Gaza. Speaking with CNN, he also called the deadly strike that killed six people Tuesday an act of state terror and said Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu needs to be brought to justice. The Wall Street Journal is reporting President Trump had a tense phone call with Prime Minister Netanyahu about his attack on Qatar. Trump reportedly told Netanyahu the decision to target Hamas leaders in Qatar wasn't wise, that he was angry he learned about the attack from the U.S. military instead of Israel. Meanwhile, Israeli military reservists and family members of hostages protested and marched towards Israel's military headquarters in Tel Aviv Wednesday. This is Vicky Cohn, the mother of Nimrod Cohn, an Israeli hostage held in Gaza.
It's not only a march, it's also a protest that was organized by IDF soldiers that are against the war, and they say, like we, the families of the hostages, that we, our prime minister, need to stop the war and sign a deal that will bring all of the hostages back home.
Israeli forces have killed 22 Palestinians in Gaza since dawn, including 16 in Gaza City. Five Palestinians were killed seeking food. Meanwhile, Al Jazeera is reporting Israel arrested seven fishermen off the coast of Gaza City, holding them in an unknown location. Israel also bombed three homes in the densely populated Shati refugee camp in Gaza. This comes as Israel continues to bomb Gaza City, ordering the evacuation of nearly 1 million people. On Wednesday, Palestinians searched through rubble and debris at the site of a Gaza City residential tower building that was hit by an Israeli strike. Here's Magid Sukar, who is sheltering in a tent near the tower.
4 tons of explosives hit the tower. Our belongings flew in the air. Our tents are gone. Our money is gone. Our conditions have gotten worse. There's no shelter for us. What does Trump want? What does Netanyahu want?
Members of the global Samud flotilla are vowing to continue their efforts to break Israel's siege on Gaza after two of the group's ships came under fire, apparently from drone attacks while docked in Tunisia. After initial downplaying the attacks, Tunisia's interior ministry said Wednesday they were premeditated acts but did not name a suspect. Activists have directly implicated Israel, with a spokesperson saying there is no other authority that would do such an attack, unquote. On Wednesday, thousands of Tunisians rallied at a beach near Tunis to support the group's efforts to bring humanitarian aid to Gaza.
We cannot commit ourselves to Palestine without committing ourselves to all the other oppressed. But it begins with Palestine, because Palestine crystallizes all the complicities of our governments, all the complicities of our governments. And that is why we, the people, must take the place of our governments, because they do not do it. And we, people who have never sailed, commit ourselves on boats and are going to achieve the impossible.
There are dozens of countries represented by the participants in the Samud flotilla. Later in the broadcast, we'll go to Tunisia for an update. Israeli President Isaac Herzog says he argued with British Prime Minister Keir Starmer during a tough meeting at 10 Downing Street, London, Wednesday. Speaking at the Chatham House think tank after the talks, Herzog said Israel's war in Gaza is aimed at, quote, defending Western values.
We are defending Europe. We are defending Western values and the free world with the blood and the tears of our sons and daughters and families. That's what we're doing.
As Israeli President Herzog spoke, protesters gathered outside Chatham House holding signs reading, "Stop the slaughter, don't listen to war criminals." Meanwhile, the front page headline of the Scottish newspaper, The National, read, "Starmer rolls out red carpet for genocide," unquote. According to Middle East Eye, the Crown Prosecution Service's counterterrorism division appointed a prosecutor to urgently review an application for an arrest warrant for President Herzog. Palestinian rights groups cited his remarks in October 2023, stating all Palestinians in Gaza were unequivocally responsible for the October 7th Hamas attacks. Despite the investigation, UK authorities made no attempt to arrest Herzog. Poland has invoked Article 4 of the North Atlantic Treaty, calling for consultations with fellow NATO members, including the United States, after at least 19 Russian drones flew deep into Polish territory overnight Tuesday. The incursion prompted Polish and NATO forces to scramble fighter jets as authorities closed major airports. On Wednesday, Polish Prime Minister Tusk told Parliament, quote, "This situation brings us the closest we've been to open conflict since World War II," unquote. In Kyiv, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky slammed Western leaders for what he called a lack of action against Russia, calling the drone incursion another provocation by Moscow.
From the first hour of the night, our military recorded Russian drones moving towards the Polish border. And this movement was not an accident or a mistake, but deliberate movement. The Russians used both our territory and Belarusian territory to push them into Polish airspace.
This weekend, Belarus is set to play host to major joint military drills of Russian and Belarusian forces. They're the first such war games since early 2022, right before Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. The Trump administration's considering military strikes on Venezuela if President Nicolas Maduro doesn't step up pressure on drug cartels, according to independent investigative reporter Ken Klippenstein, citing military sources, who said the Pentagon's drafting plans to attack Venezuela's military aircraft or to bomb its airfields. This comes just days after Venezuelan F-16 fighter jets buzzed U.S. Navy ships gathering north of Venezuela. Meanwhile, The Intercept is reporting the 11 people on board the boat in the Caribbean that was destroyed by the U.S. military last week were said to have survived an initial strike and were killed shortly after in follow-up attacks. The boat reportedly turned back toward shore after people on board apparently spotted a military aircraft stalking it. Republican Senator Rand Paul revealed the attack was carried out by a drone. Paul criticized the strike as a breach of long-accepted rules of engagement. The Trump administration's claimed without evidence it targeted Venezuelan drug traffickers. Legal experts call the extrajudicial killings acts of murder and a war crime. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer has fired the UK ambassador to the United States, Peter Mandelson, over his ties to the disgraced, now dead sexual predator Jeffrey Epstein. A senior Foreign Office official told members of Parliament Mandelson had failed to disclose the extent and depth of his friendship with Epstein when Starmer appointed him ambassador. This comes after the tabloid newspaper The Sun published a trove of emails revealing Mandelson urged Epstein to fight for early release from prison after his 2008 conviction for procuring a child for prostitution, writing, quote, "Your friends stay with you and love you," he said. In Washington, D.C., Republican House Oversight Chair James Comer has rejected calls to hear testimony from a forensic handwriting expert about Donald Trump's signature on a birthday letter in Jeffrey Epstein's 50th birthday book. The note features a nude sketch of a woman and concludes with the words, "May every day be another wonderful secret," unquote. On Wednesday, Comer told reporters the letter has, quote, absolutely nothing to do with the overall investigation, unquote. This comes a day after the White House said it would support a forensic analysis of the signature amidst Trump's repeated denials that he'd signed it. Meanwhile, Senate Republicans blocked a bid by Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer to compel the Justice Department to release the Epstein files. Three former senior FBI officials who were fired last month are suing FBI Director Kash Patel and the Trump administration, alleging they were let go as part of a campaign of retribution for refusing to demonstrate loyalty to President Trump. Brian Driscoll, the former acting FBI director, Stephen Jensen, who ran the Washington field office, and Spencer Evans, who led the Las Vegas field office, are all alleging Patel chose to follow orders from the White House rather than federal law. According to the lawsuit, Driscoll and other top officials tried to stop attempts to fire and punish FBI officials for working on criminal probes of Trump. In Texas, immigrant rights groups and supporters are demanding the release of an El Paso DACA recipient after a federal judge terminated her deportation proceedings. Catalina Xochitl Santiago is a longtime community organizer who was seized by Border Patrol agents at the El Paso airport in early August as she was about to board a domestic flight for work. Santiago remains in an ICE jail even after immigration judge Michael Pletters ruled on Monday that her DACA status remains valid and that she cannot be deported or moved until federal judges can review her case. Meanwhile, more than 300 South Korean workers who were rounded up by ICE at a Hyundai plant in Georgia last week are expected to be deported to depart for South Korea today. At a news conference Wednesday, South Korea's president said the incident makes South Korean companies more hesitant to invest in the United States. And in New York City, mayoral candidate Zohran Mamdani is calling on FIFA to abandon dynamic pricing for the 2026 Men's World Cup as part of his Game Over Greed petition. Here's Mamdani yesterday.
It hurts because we know that while New York City is proud to be one of the hosts of the World Cup final next year, so many of our neighbors will not afford to be able to be there. They will not afford to be able to be there because FIFA is quadrupling the max ticket price that it will charge in order to be in attendance. They will not afford to be able to be there because FIFA is now deciding to use dynamic pricing for the first time in its history.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, a manhunt underway in Utah after the prominent far-right activist Charlie Kirk was assassinated Wednesday as he spoke before a large outdoor crowd at Utah Valley University. Stay with us. Great Randy Weston playing the Healers for Democracy Now! To see the interview and his music, go to democracynow.org. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. A manhunt is underway in Utah after the prominent far-right activist Charlie Kirk was assassinated on Wednesday as he spoke before a large outdoor crowd at Utah Valley University on the first stop of his fall campus tour. Kirk was 31 years old. He founded Turning Point USA when he was just 18, which grew into the largest right-wing youth movement in the country. He was a close ally of President Trump and one of the most influential young voices in the MAGA movement. Police believe Kirk was killed by a single shot, possibly fired from a nearby roof. Kirk was shot as he was responding to a question by an audience member about how many transgender individuals have been mass shooters.
Right? I'm going to give you some credit. Do you know how many mass shooters there have been in America over the last 10 years?
Counting or not counting gang violence?
Great.
Police have not yet identified the shooter, but on Wednesday night, President Trump blamed the shooting on, well, what he called the radical left.
It's long past time for all Americans and the media to confront the fact that violence and murder are the tragic consequence of demonizing those with whom you disagree day after day, year after year, in the most hateful and despicable way possible. For years, those on the radical left have compared wonderful Americans like Charlie to Nazis and the world's worst mass murderers and criminals. This kind of rhetoric is directly responsible for the terrorism that we're seeing in our country today, and it must stop right now. My administration will find each and every one of those who contributed to this atrocity and to other political violence, including the organizations that fund it and support it, as well as those who go after our judges, law enforcement officials, and everyone else who brings order to our country.
During his address, Trump referenced several other attacks on public figures, including attempts on his own life, but made no mention of any Democratic politicians who've been the target of political violence. The shooting of Charlie Kirk comes less than 3 months after a Trump supporter assassinated Democratic state lawmaker Melissa Hortman and her husband in their home. Meanwhile, a number of prominent right-wing figures are already calling for Trump to target left-wing groups. Elon Musk wrote on X, quote, "The left is the party of murder." The Manhattan Institute's Christopher Rufo wrote on X, "The last time the radical left orchestrated a wave of violence and terror, J. Edgar Hoover shut it all down within a few years. It's time, within the confines of the law, to infiltrate, disrupt, arrest, and incarcerate all of those who are responsible for this chaos," end quote. Meanwhile, the far-right influencer Laura Loomer also wrote on X, quote, "The best way President Trump can reinforce Charlie's legacy is by cracking down on the left with the full force of the government. Jail every single leftist who makes a threat of political violence. We can't allow for these people to live among us in society."
These comments come despite evidence the vast majority of political violence in the United States is committed by the far right. Last year, a unit of the Department of Justice published a major study on domestic terrorism. It found, quote, "Since 1990, far-right extremists have committed far more ideologically motivated homicides than far-left or radical Islamist extremists, including 227 events that took more than 520 lives," unquote. We're joined now by Jeff Charlotte, who's written extensively about political violence. He's journalist, author, and professor of English and creative writing at Dartmouth College. His latest book is The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War. His most recent post on Substack is The Struggle is Long. Thank you so much for joining us, Professor Jeff Charlotte. First, if you can respond to this horrific moment yesterday, as he was taking questions from the crowd, the assassination, one bullet to the neck. Talk about your response.
I think we're in a moment of great peril. The minute I heard this, spending the time that I do amongst right-wingers and reading right-wing media and fascist media and understanding their imagination of the moment, which is, look, I'm not going to take away that they've lost one of their own, and I don't doubt some of them mourn him, but you also see a certain amount of glee rippling through that world. The language that I keep seeing is the gloves are off, everything's on the table, it's on, now it's time to do it, right? So there's a sense in which, rather than mourning their fallen comrade, they're seeing it as, some are seeing it as a license to further escalate political violence.
Well, Jeff Charlotte, if you could just provide some broader context, explain who Charlie Kirk was and the kind of extremely broad influence that he had. I mean, some have commented that, in fact, he was more important for Trump than some of his cabinet secretaries.
Yeah, I really think this is he's one of the great underestimated figures outside right-wing organizing circles. And that's because he had a three-hour daily, you know, three-hour talk show. He had a bigger presence on TikTok than most political figures. And so he was misunderstood as an influencer, and he was that. But primarily and fundamentally, what he was an organizer, and a very, very effective one. You know, political analysts quibble over how essential he was to swinging so much of the youth vote to Trump. But there's no question that he was a huge, huge part of it. And he did that by transforming far-right youth politics in America. The previous organizations had always been built around ideology, rather it was kind of a William F. Buckley conservatism or libertarianism. And Kirk's insight was absolute devotion to the great leader, cult of personality, a central tenet of fascism. His politics would change. His enemies were Trump's enemies, whoever that was that day. He was, in so many ways, and I think Trump viewed him this as the son he really wanted to have, a figure of tremendous influence. And I think that's important for us to understand, because the scale of the right-wing reaction is going to be is going to correlate with that.
Professor Charlotte, talk about Turning Point USA. What is the significance of this organization and his role in building it?
So he founded it in 2012. And at the time, he was kind of a Tea Party Republican.
18 years old, right?
Yes, he was a young guy. He decided to drop out of college. I think a lot of people make a lot of that, and he couldn't even go to college. What the guy could do was organize and charm rich old white men and raise money, and he did it. And he grew it, and then took a turn toward Christian nationalism. It had originally been largely secular. It had originally been somewhat indifferent to or agnostic on LGBTQ plus rights, but he would see the moment. He was very good at, like, his, you know, his hero Trump, at sort of tacking ever rightward wherever the current would take him. He built it to this behemoth that has chapters on hundreds and hundreds of college campuses. I think it's worth noting, because you're seeing some people saying, well, you know, I disagree with what he said, but he was a champion of free speech. He died debating. Look, the fact that he was murdered doesn't change the fact that he also he was an opponent of free speech. There's no other way to cut it for a man who created something called Professor Watch List, School Board Watch List, to name and frighten people from teaching, who advocated restrictions on what school teachers could teach, who called for, and there's a clip you can see online, who called for the televised public executions. And he had a pretty broad category in mind, but what was really chilling was he wanted this to be required viewing for children. And you can look at this clip and you can see his colleagues, they're sort of trolling, but Kirk again and again pulls it back to seriousness. And he says, no, this isn't a joke. This has to be a holy experience, a teaching experience for children, watching enemies be killed. That is not a champion of free speech.
Jeff Charlotte, his main issues are immigration, women's rights, abortion, gun control, a major one, as you talked about. He repeatedly praised the Second Amendment. This is going back to April 2023.
Never live in a society when you have an armed citizenry and you won't have a single gun death. That is nonsense. It's drivel. Wow. But I am...